Betches Media presents.
A lot of them aren't even pretending to be in charge.
Slow the testing down.
Remove him from office.
No justice, no peace.
Cast a vote that will make you proud.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
Will you shut up, man?
Listen.
Hello, and welcome to the Betches Sup Podcast. I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Sammy Sage.
And today we're going to start the show with a quick update about emerging and disturbing explanations for what happened on Wednesday. And then we're hopping on with our friend and favorite constitutional expert, Ben Sheehan, to discuss how to remove a president in 12 days. This is all Sammy and I have been talking about for the past 36 hours or however long it's been.
I am like furious.
Furious.
I get more mad. Every hour, every time I see, oh, we could be impeached by midweek, it's like, and?
Exactly.
And the nuclear codes could be pressed by 5 minutes from now. So none of that helps me.
So speaking of things we are furious about, we're learning more about the abundant signs that far-right extremists were planning out in the open to occupy the Capitol with weapons. Moreover, it's becoming clear that failures at pretty much every level resulted in the Capitol Police handling the invasion alone without the support of the National Guard for hours. So why wasn't a more serious policing presence planned amid extremists openly planning to storm the Capitol? So the Capitol Police are to blame here. They really needed to ask for assistance at the Capitol prior to the 6th, and it seems that that did not happen. Instead, the Pentagon put tighter limits on any role that the Guard might have had in the response. So meaning that as things began to escalate, those troops couldn't really just rush the Capitol to help. Instead, requests to activate additional law enforcement and Guard presence basically went through a patchwork of authorizations. Everybody had different responsibilities. The fact that DC isn't a state handicapped some of this response, as we had said. But these bureaucratic failures that happened during the invasion don't really account for why the premeditated invasion planned openly was not considered a real possibility. Capitol Police told Congress they were ready. Representatives said they weren't really given any intelligence that suggested there was going to be attack, even though there was plenty of evidence that this was happening.
They made shirts that said Civil War, January 6th.
Absolutely. I say we're learning more about how this was planned out in the open, but that was there. And, you know, apparently even the New York Times, the day after the election, noticed that there was a group popping up with 300,000 people planning to stop the steal and that they were starting to talk about events. And they begged Facebook. They were like, we're doing this reporting and this looks really dangerous. And Facebook really delayed taking it down. And by then there were like a million sort of splinter groups. So as the riotous mob grew more dangerous, the chief of Capitol Police called Pentagon officials and did ask for backup. According to the Washington Post, an army official speaking on behalf of the army secretary said that's not going to be possible, that the optics of having the National Guard there in the Capitol weren't great. The optics of it seemed to be the real issue at every stage, and just the people that were actually there not being able to handle the mob. So eventually, as things escalated, people higher up in the Pentagon decided to activate the Guard, but the call to activate actually came from Mike Pence. There are reports that the president, President Trump, was not interested at all in launching the National Guard. And even two more kind of chilling details. From their secure locations, Nancy Pelosi begged Virginia Governor Ralph Northam to send the Guard, and he did rather swiftly, although there's still always a delay. You can't just send them. Like, they have to get ready, especially because they had been told before you're not really going to be allowed to have these tactics. And House Majority Steny Hoyer called Maryland Mayor Larry Hogan to do the same in his state, basically while he was in the room with Schumer and Pelosi, saying, you have to do this now. Hogan said his request for authorization was repeatedly delayed or ignored by the Pentagon. This patchwork of authorities and authorizations meant nobody showed up for hours. And there are a lot, people are asking questions.
Okay, let's talk about the patchwork of authorities and authorizations. That patchwork was pre-set up by Donald. Well, okay, there's obviously an existing chain of command, clearly, but the specific placement of the individuals in the patchwork and their loyalty to the president and his coup attempt or his attempt at inciting a coup, those people are the reason that it took so long. Those people are the reason that Steny Hoyer is like begging the governor of his state for authorization, for the ability to send his state's National Guard, and the governor's like, I can't get anyone to respond to me, because they purposely put someone who should be the one to respond to that, who's a Trump loyalist, in the position to slow that down. This was all premeditated. Everyone who's like, okay, if I ever hear anyone call Donald Trump incompetent again, I swear to God, the rant that will come will be so... It's, Donald Trump is not incompetent. He is purposely not doing the things that you think he should be doing as a president, because those are the things he should be doing. He is very competently working against those things.
He knows exactly what he's not doing.
Exactly. Exactly. The reason he appears incompetent to you is to, or to most people, is because he is actively working against what we define as competence or the results of competence. That is why no one should ever mistake anything that this administration does for an accident. It is a malicious, purposeful act that will land money, power, control, power over somebody else in the food chain, mm-hmm. in the hands of Donald Trump. That's all this is about, and he needs to go yesterday.
We're at the point where, you know, throughout this administration, you hear from pundits a lot of, like, the most simple explanation is probably the correct one. We're at a stage where the most simple explanation is that this was premeditated and staged and purposefully not intervened with while our entire line of, most of our line of succession was in crisis.
Okay, get in his head for 1 second. You're the delusional president and you think that Mike Pence is going to be able to save you on this day. You're hearing it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. But you are crazy. I don't want to say he's crazy. I don't want to give him that. But you're Donald
Trump.
Give him
that out. Yeah.
You're a malignant narcissist and you don't get that. Like, you also can't read. So there's that. you know that the only narcissistic supply that you get is from these supporters who are going to vindicate you and avenge your loss or your win. Of course he's going to, there's two sides. There's the government in the Capitol building who's trying to, like, go through with the democracy thing. And then there's the rioters, the terrorists. He's on their side.
Of course, yeah.
He's on their side. He's not even on their, not just on their side. He is directing them. And he doesn't care if Mike Pence gets killed or taken hostage.
They were in there yelling, where's Pence?
Oh, shit. Because I didn't know that. Because Mike Pence betrayed him in his mind.
Right. That's probably, I mean, Mike Pence apparently has no interest in using the 25th and that's won't why answer the phone.
That's why it's so confusing. Like, even in the wake of this, the people who they should have realized when push comes to shove, he doesn't give a shit about me. The fact that Pence himself isn't grabbing this opportunity for his own safety and power is, and revenge in some ways, is absolutely, I don't, baffling to me.
I agree.
Plus, why wouldn't they want to convict him so he can't run against them for president in 2024?
I don't know, unless they have seen this happen and now are genuinely scared for their own lives.
Right. I mean, I keep returning in my head to, like, what's happening behind the scenes that is making them move so slowly? Like, are there other threats that we don't know about? Are there, like, what are the X factors?
I wonder if some of it is they think that, what do you get the impression from the statements he's made over the past 36 hours, which are that, like, okay, there's going to be a new president and okay, I'm not going to inauguration. Does he seem scared to you? Like, he's realizing he could face serious consequences. And with that, I wonder if maybe they're like, let's let him think he's going to get impeached the whole time. So he stays calm the whole time.
No, I think we've maybe bought ourselves 24 hours before mm-hmm. before something enters his head, someone betrayed him. Literally, we bought ourselves 24 hours of calm, and Nancy Pelosi is just blowing it. Maybe she thinks that she can keep him calm till next week if she doesn't move for impeachment. Maybe that's the calculus.
When you only have, right, yeah, that's what I think. But if you only have 12 days, that means every day is a greater proportion of those 12 days. It's like, if you only have 12 days, every single day is more meaningful. So I don't want to hear you're going to deal with this tomorrow afternoon. That's like a tenth of the total time we have at this point.
Right. And if you're too afraid to do it, that should tell you why you need to do it right now, not like see how close you can get to the 19th because
we got to close. I mean, I think Lindsey Graham is like, I mean, we should think about it if something like this happens again. Something like a violent mob storming the Capitol. If right. something, it happened. The worst thing that could have happened. What are you talking about?
Okay. They were lucky that none of them opened fire. There was no suicide bomber, that there was no actual hostage taken.
I honestly think that's probably because they didn't actually think they were going to get in. If they genuinely thought they would.
I think there were, okay. What I'm thinking is that there are two types of individuals who attended this event.
That's exactly what a professor specialist of this said on the Daily this morning. She said there's three.
Yeah. I have not listened. Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. I'll say one is like one is the stands that are just like, oh my God, like we're here. Like we're in the Capitol. Like a lot of people have been asking. Then there's the people who are like the survivalists who are like the kind of people who do like have standoffs with like state police, like who brought arms, and they had like a map of the Capitol. They knew where they were going. Like people who actually like the preparedness people, those people were there for like the war. They weren't there for like the tour. They were there for the war.
Right. And that's very clear based on
what was the third one that they said.
I think the third one might have been the sort of high level people that are part of organizing and recruiting for the far right that are looking at this and looking how to optimize it for recruitment. And I mean, this is ISIS stuff.
So like HR.
This is why ISIS, like, that's why they do, yeah, terrorist attacks are very effective in recruiting more terrorists.
Right, right. So you have like, organizers.
Yes.
Okay. I get it. No.
It's like it's a pyramid scheme. It's a fascism pyramid. It's a traitor's pyramid scheme, basically.
Right. Right. That's why
it's the tables.
Right. Our bond.
Yeah.
For terrorists. It's just sort of like, why aren't they? That's why it's so frightening that no one in government is doing anything. Like,
nothing.
Also, when by not holding accountability, there's basically no accountability. There have been a few resignations in the police. Doesn't mean much to me, honestly. Like, there have also been firings, but
right, because they also said if you don't step down, we're going to fire you, obviously.
Right. Like, so. Okay, literally the worst thing that will happen to a police officer in this country, it seems, is that they lose their job. They don't get held accountable in any other way, ever. Regardless, the number one person who needs to be held accountable is Donald Trump. The number two tied are Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz. Even just doing them would make a huge difference. And then obviously these like clowns on social media who like think that sitting on Nancy Pelosi's desk is a joke and not a crime. And then we need a few of those to be tied up in legal problems so that they can share it with their Facebook friends.
Yeah. And luckily they didn't wear masks, so we know who they are.
Right. Imagine if there were masks. It would have been so much harder. Also, I'm reading that it may be a super spreader event.
Oh, absolutely. I did see that earlier today, that at least one person knowingly had COVID-19 when they went in there. Well,
we all dread the what should we have for dinner question. I know I do. I love a home-cooked meal, but I don't always have the time, energy, or groceries to make it happen. Being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, so I can spend less time trying to be top chef and more time watching it. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, or quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, Home Chef has you covered for delicious meals without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you never have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life. And of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/feverdream. That's homechef.com/feverdream for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. homechef.com/feverdream. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
We're back with Ben Sheehan, author of OMG, WTF, Does the Constitution Actually Say? Ben has helped us parse constitutional questions quite a bit in the past year, and it turns out this president is really attesting our knowledge right down to the very end.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So our first question for you, Ben, is something Sammy and I have been talking about all morning and every night, which is, what is the fastest way to remove a president allowed for in the Constitution?
That would be impeachment and removal. And you could do that in a day if you wanted. All this would take would be a vote, a simple majority vote in the House, and then walk right over to the Senate and have a vote in the Senate to convict and remove the president, and right after a vote to prevent them from holding future federal office. You could easily do that in a day if you wanted.
So why are we doing it next Wednesday?
I can't answer that question. That has to do with maybe waiting for the people in D.C. to who protested to leave. Maybe some deals have to be struck with people who would vote to remove. But this could feasibly happen in a day if everybody wanted.
Do you think there's a chance that they're delaying it so that they can make it happen swiftly? Because I like my biggest fear is like, we're going to go through committees and speeches. And that was already unbearable on Wednesday night. But imagine Trump watching that with all the powers he has. And like, what would he be doing during that whole time?
I don't know. And I can't explain the rationale. Like if you were to ask me, you know, 4 days ago, what event would lead to the quickest impeachment and removal of a president, I would say inciting a coup on the federal government would probably be my answer.
Prescient.
Well, actually, Ben, you were really raising the alarms about the 6th even before. It seemed like you had a sense it was going to be a very big day. Was that because of the plan to object to the certifications, or also what ultimately happened was the violent coup attempt?
Well, I was reading the law, you know, months ago, and I noticed that there, you know, there's this moment where everyone's counting the votes and there's an opportunity to object. And there have been objections in the past. You know, there was an objection and nonviolent and like peaceful, and they went along with it. But there was an objection in 1969 to one of North Carolina's votes. And there was an objection in 2005 to Ohio because of rampant voter suppression. I mean, the Secretary of State in Ohio was literally delivering one voting machine to college campuses with thousands of students to create these like 10-hour lines. So, you know, there have been objections and serious discussions in the past, but if we're looking at like the norms versus the guardrails, this is a person who doesn't operate on norms, and like, what are the actual guardrails they could try to exploit? And this is one of them.
It seems like after this, we need to look into making some of these norms laws.
Yeah, I agree, especially when they were written in 1887 and we haven't updated them since. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah. So yeah. Let's keep talking about impeachment. You mentioned the House seems pretty prepared to move forward with impeaching this president a second time, because he'd be the only president to be impeached a second time, which seems like it would be a political stain, even though those don't seem to stick to this president. But the impeachment process also offers some other possibilities that could protect the nation against Trump potentially holding federal office again. I don't think those have ever been used, though. Can you describe what those are and if there is a precedent?
Well, they've never been used for a president. We've never had a president convicted of impeachment, but they have been used for federal judges. So we've had about 8 or 9 federal impeachments with conviction in the Senate, and they've all been federal judges. And about 3 of those have also been barred from holding future federal office. I believe the last one was in 2010, Judge Thomas Porteous in Louisiana was convicted on bribery and impeached and removed by the Senate and then barred from holding future federal office. So there have been 2 or 3 judges that they've prevented, but it's a separate vote. So once the Senate convicts the president, then they take a second vote to decide, do we also want to make them, you know, not be allowed to hold future federal office?
My question on that is, so there's no way that they could vote to not remove him, but to bar him from holding federal office, or would that be possible?
That's correct. No, it says the punishment in the Constitution says the punishment, you know, the person must be required they must be removed from office if they're convicted, and the punishment can't go further than also being barred from holding future federal office.
Got it. So it would make sense. So really it sort of backs these Republicans kind of into a corner in terms of like, do they want Trump to have control over them for the next 4 years? It really would benefit them to remove him and to bar him from holding federal office. Like, should they just act in their own interests?
Yeah, I mean, logic would tell you yes, and maybe that's why they're delaying this, is to have these, you know, conversations one by one and let people know if they're not aware of that already, although they probably should be since they swore an oath to this document to have their job. So you would think they've read it.
You would. Speaking of the document, can you describe the process for the 25th Amendment, since there are actually quite a few steps? And is it as simple that the cabinet secretaries just decide he has to go? And also, what do we do about the fact that there are so many acting secretaries and vacancies in the cabinet? Like, do those count?
It's a really good question. So basically, what happens is you have the cabinet. So we're talking eight of the 15 core cabinet secretaries. Or some other body Congress could establish. There was talk earlier this year, Congressman Raskin and Nancy Pelosi said that they could maybe create a separate body that would decide this as well. That's also in the Constitution. What it would happen is the majority of the cabinet and the vice president would send a letter to Chuck Grassley and Nancy Pelosi, the Senate president pro tempore and the Speaker of the House, saying, this guy cannot do the job anymore. He's unable to execute the duties of the office. Originally, this was designed if like the president ended up in a coma after an assassination attempt. There's no reason it can't be used for something else. So what would happen is the vice president would suddenly become the acting president after the receipt of that letter. And then the president could respond with their own letter saying, no, I'm fine. These guys are jealous, and, you know, go back to being president. And then they'd have 4 days, the same, you know, a cabinet and VP to say, no, he really can't do the job. And then Pence goes back to being acting president, and Congress, it triggers a process where Congress has 21 days to vote whether or not to remove the president. And they have to vote by 2/3 in the Senate and the House. And if they do that, the president is removed and the VP continues as the acting president.
So it sounds harder than the impeachment, and much harder. Everyone's been talking about this 25th Amendment for for 4 years, and no one even talks about this 4 days thing.
Right. Well, I mean, if, you know, it does depend on Trump's letter. Like, Trump could sit on it and say, you know, I'm not letting the VP have, you know, duties of the acting president, you know, because it does require their participation. Now, you would think he would want to send that letter pretty quickly to go back to being the president. You know, I don't know if reading and writing is strength, so I don't know if that would ever go over. But, it does seem, from looking at it, like it would probably take, you know, a little bit longer than impeachment.
Just scrawled in chirpy, like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah, that is what it would be. He would cross it out and be like,
right, yeah, like the hurricane map. Yeah. Could the impeachment process in terms, could it extend beyond his term in office, the conviction process?
For impeachment?
Yeah.
Well, impeachment is you know, it's not a criminal procedure. It's just a procedure with which to remove an office. Okay. So once they're no longer in office on January 20th at 12 p.m., they can be tried for the crimes they were impeached for. They can be tried for other crimes they weren't impeached for, but they no longer, you know, have this process to sort of preempt the criminal process. So they're suddenly liable, which is, I would imagine, why he does not want, you know, to leave office.
Yeah. Something else this period has sort of exposed is that maybe it's not the best idea to have like 10 weeks between when 80 million people say, we don't want this guy in the most powerful office ever, and him leaving. What does the Constitution say about the length of time between elections and inaugurations and anything? Has that ever changed?
It has changed. So the original length was actually, March 4th that we presidents. Yeah. So it was even longer. And when the Constitution was written, and for the, you know, first 100+ years, you know, we didn't have cars with heat. So it was, you know, it was hard to transfer electoral votes and travel and get things to Washington. So they wanted to give people time to, like, you know, ride it out during the winter and get there safely. So it's
had
all
to bring like, their slave know, caravans with them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like horse and buggy, you know, making sure that we can get there safely and not have everyone, you know, die of dysentery. I mean, it's just so like
we're still basically following that.
Well, with the 20th Amendment, I believe that was 1933, was ratified, and that changed the date from March 4th to January 20th. And it also changed the terms from for representative senators to January 3rd. So it changed it a little bit. But you actually used to have this really long lame duck period for Congress where they weren't required by the Constitution to meet until December. So they would take the, meet in December, right? Say if they only met once a year. So they'd meet in December. The people with new terms would start March 4th, and then they didn't have to meet again until December. So
they worked 1 month a year?
You could have 4 months of a lame duck period in Congress doing shit, and then you would have March 4th, and then you wouldn't have, the new Congress wouldn't have to meet again until December. So if they wanted to undo stuff, it would be like a year after. So it was this insanely long period. So the 20th Amendment sought to fix this, but still today, like we can get things done a lot quicker. And this is one of the many basic things in the Constitution that needs to be done.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely appreciate the argument that you got to get a lot done in that transition period anyway. It's probably pretty hard, but I was reading today that other countries have a much shorter window where they get this done. My question is, what if we pass a constitutional amendment making inauguration tomorrow? Then could we just inaugurate Joe Biden tomorrow?
Gotta get it ratified by those states.
Gotta get it fucking ratified.
The legislatures. No. Okay, wait. As a New Yorker, you're describing this incredibly slow schedule to me. And I'm like physically reacting. It is like, why are we still doing this? Why don't we change these things? Like, we have the internet now, and we definitely don't need to be enduring this.
Look, we have all learned the benefits of Zoom during this pandemic, and I feel like we could just get all the legislators to hop on someone's premium Zoom account and get 38 states to maybe update this. It shouldn't be a partisan issue to change a date. But you know, it is 2021 and everything's a partisan issue, so who knows? But you would need 38 states buy-in, either their legislatures or constitutional conventions within the states. And before that happens, you need two-thirds of the House and the Senate to propose an amendment, or two-thirds of legislatures to call for a constitutional convention, which has never happened in American history.
To throw back a callback, we can impeach and remove in a day.
We can't. We could, theoretically.
We could, if we were motivated enough.
Wow.
My last question, Ben, I wanted to ask you, your fiance also has a podcast, Jackie Johnson, Natchview Podcast. I imagine she is personally responsible for getting me into like cruelty-free beauty, and I'm sure a lot of other people, but I imagine I wonder if you are the guinea pig, which is maybe a bad choice of words for a cruelty-free podcast. I know a lot of us are looking forward to some self-care this weekend. I'm wondering if you have any in store and if you get to be the recipient of all of the luxurious, fun, natural skincare in your home.
I cannot tell you how much my skincare game has changed.
It looks great.
Thank you so much. Also, water helps. I started drinking 6 times more water than I ever did. I have like a timed bottle where it's like you drink this much by, you know, 7 a.m., 9 a.m., whatever. Changed the game. Yeah. Helped me so much.
Wow.
Lots of great products. I'm a big fan of Berlin Skin. It's a woman-owned brand, obviously vegan and cruelty-free. And they have an amazing sandalwood cream that really helps with inflammation and irritation and just calms everything down. I use that morning and night.
Sunscreen. Look at this range on this man. My God.
Very important. Sunscreen in the morning, even if you're not planning on going outside. Sunscreen, sunscreen, sunscreen.
I'm a huge SPF wearer.
Don't overwash your face. I rinse my face in the morning. I wash it at night. You know, overwashing, it increases oil production. So Jackie has done many wonderful things for my life, and certainly chief among them is my skincare ritual.
That is amazing.
Amazing, amazing. Thank you so much for joining us, Ben. It's always a pleasure. Definitely thinking about the first time I cracked open the book, there are so many prescient parts where sort of have your sides. We're like, by the way, this is ridiculous. Something will soon show how ridiculous this is, and it should probably change. So is all of this at all gratifying?
At times, I think the most gratifying part is that I've done a lot of Zooms with schools.
Awesome.
Who are using the book and reading it. And so I'm Zooming with 8th graders and 12th graders and they have amazing questions, and to see people and getting feedback like, you know, I didn't care about the Constitution until I read your book. I didn't understand it until this. Like, just the fact that people are finding it accessible, that's the whole reason I wanted to do this.
Yeah, very it definitely accessible. Is such an empowering feeling to feel like you actually have a grasp on how these things work and feel that you can speak out against them strongly because they were so clearly violating what these things were meant to do in so many ways.
Well, thank you. That really means a lot.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Ben. Until the return of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Sammy Sage.
And this is the Bet to Sup podcast.
Betches.